conference record has joined the conference.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the June 2012 Spec Lead call. This month, we're going to be talking about expert group nominations. My name is Harold Ogle. I will be going through a presentation talking about our side of the nominations. So first of all, talking about expert group nominations, we have JSRs. People want to be on the JSRs. Really, the expert group nomination process that I'll be talking about today is how we get the experts onto our JSRs so that we can collaborate with them in developing our specifications. So this second slide, it talks about an overview of what I'll be discussing. Moving on to the third slide, talking about the composition of an expert group. So when we form an expert group, we're trying to have a fairly diverse representation of people who have a stake in the technology of the specification. I also talk here about the how you find out who is on the expert group. So the public can view the people who are on the expert group or just the JCP members who are on the expert group, depending on which JCP version you're operating under for your JSR. They can look at the detail page or the summary page of the JSR. As we go through these slides, I'll have a number of URLs. They typically have XXX for which you can substitute any JSR number. So for instance, the recent major revision to the Java Community Process JSR is JSR 358. So if you wanted to look up the expert group for that JSR, you would put in this URL and put in 358 instead of the XXX. So I mentioned that it's a little different based on JCP version. With JCP 2.7 and earlier JSRs, the expert group that is displayed to the public on these pages just shows the JCP member. That could be an individual member. It could be the name of a jug. It could be the name of a company or some other organization. With JCP 2.8 JSRs, it shows that information, but also the name of the individual who is actually serving as the expert representing that member. In addition to the public listing, there is a private page, the expert group private page, which has not only that information, but also the contact information. That's intended for the people who are on the expert group to be able to communicate with one another and contact one another. So I wanted to be explicit that officially the expert group is just consists of those people who are listed on that private listing of the expert group. Over the years, we've had situations where a JSR will go through its entire development, and we'll get to final release, and then after final release, we'll have people come to us and say, you know, I'm not listed on the expert group, but I should be. I've been participating all along. officially, those people are not part of the expert group because they haven't been listed and gone through the process that we're talking about today to get listed on the expert group. So you as spec leads, if you think that somebody's on your expert group, you should make sure that they are actually listed so that they get the official recognition as having participated. Also, there's a question of in order to be listed, there are a number of legal steps that you go through to be able to participate. And if someone is participating on the expert group, in your mind, but isn't listed there, it's not clear that they are actually participating under the same legal framework as everyone else. So, a word of caution. Also, when you first submit a JSR proposal, one of the things that you put into the proposal is a listing of who will be on your initial expert group. That listing does not automatically translate into having those people on your expert group through some kind of magical clerical process. Those people actually have to go through the steps that we'll be outlining here, just as anyone else. One of the reasons for this is that often in the JSR proposal, it just says the names of JCP members rather than the individual people. So if you're thinking that you're going to have IBM on your expert group, we don't know in the PMO who from IBM is necessarily going to be on the expert group, and that's where they go through the nomination process. Moving on to the next slide, slide four. This is just a screenshot of what the public listing looks like. This is a portion of a public JSR page showing the specification lead. It's a little gray area toward the bottom. Specification lead, and then what this looks like. This is a 2.7 JSR, as you see. And so it shows just the JCP members. Many of them are individuals here, but we also have Samsung. And so the individual name is not listed there. Moving on to slide five, this is an example of a different JSR's public listing. But this is a 2.8 JSR. And so it shows how it looks for members who are individuals, but also the individuals who are representing non-individual JCP members, such as Applix and the others that are listed there. So it shows the member name, and then if it's not an individual, it shows the individual who's representing that member. Moving on to slide six, talking about the nomination itself. So the process is that the nominee nominates themselves, and then both the spec lead and the program management office vote on that nomination. And when both votes are yes, the nominee is automatically added as an expert on the expert group. In order to submit a nomination, the nominee has to have an account on jcp.org. This is a given if somebody's been on an expert group before they have an account. So they create an account, and they can submit a nomination as soon as they've created an account. There may be further steps that they need to take in order to be legally permitted to be on an expert group, but it's fine that they can submit the nomination. The reason for that is that we don't want to slow down your ability as a spec lead to be able to consider the nomination and follow up on their technical expertise, their background, the expertise of their organization, and to explore that and start considering it, while in parallel, we in the PMO can work on whatever administrative stuff that needs to be done in order for them to participate. So they go to this URL. There's a form there. They fill out the form. As soon as they submit the form, an email message is generated to you, the spec lead, with the content of that form saying that there is a nomination for your consideration. So you can review it in the email. When you're ready to vote, then you can go to the administration tab of your JSR, and I'll go into a bit more detail about that in a little while. But as soon as they submit it, the email is generated, and both the PMO and spec lead can log in and cast the votes. As soon as the nominee has submitted their nomination, they can go log into the, or they're already logged in because they've submitted the nomination, but they can log in again in future or immediately and check the status of their nomination. So they can see a version of the same nomination form that we in the PMO and you spec leads see and see what the votes are. To see who's voted and who hasn't voted on their nomination. So this is just a portion, moving on to slide 7, this is a portion of the nomination form. They have a place toward the top where they can say which GSR it is, and then a field for talking about their qualifications and how much time they can commit toward working on the expert group. If they are representing a JCP member other than themselves, there's also a form underneath, a field underneath for them to talk about the expertise of their organization in addition to their individual expertise. Moving on to slide 8. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how we in the PMO vote. So our vote is based entirely on whether they can legally participate. We don't take into account any of the technical expertise. That is completely your purview as the spec lead. So all we vote on is whether they can participate. And that can change. So our vote, we try to vote, you know, within 24 hours of the nomination being submitted. And that vote can change based on our follow-up with the nominee. So that's all to say that you as a spec lead should not be viewing the PMO vote that's there at the moment as influencing your vote at all. If we vote that they can't participate, that isn't by any, it shouldn't be taken as a permanent state because that can change. So you should just be, as a spec lead, considering whether you want the people on your expert group and not worry about the PMO vote. So the things that we consider as a PMO, the nominee has to represent an active JCP member. That JCP member has to have the appropriate Java specification participation agreement in place. That's the membership agreement. But there are two versions of it, and depending on your JSR, although almost all of the all modern JSRs are going to be operating under JSPA2. And that's the one that most people who are active have signed. But if there is an older JSR that has been inactive or dormant for some time and then gets reactivates itself, the spec lead spec lead company gets renewed interest or funding, or the spec lead changes, then there could be a JSR that operates under JSPA1. So the JCP member that this nominee is representing would have to have a JSPA1 in order to participate in a JSR. And which JSPA a JSR is operating under is indicated on the public page. As I say, for all modern JSRs or JSRs that have started in the last really 10 years, they're all operating under JSPA2. So there is a check that we have to do for the U.S. State Department to see whether the nominee is coming from an embargoed or a terrorist country. So if they are, then the U.S. State Department rules say that we can't have any truck with them. So that really has never been an issue, but it is a check that we do. The expert group has to be open. If the expert group is not open and we haven't heard from you, the spec lead, that you want to make an exception, then we will notify the nominee that the expert group is closed and not accepting new nominations. If it's an individual member, there is an exhibit or a kind of an attachment to the JSPA called the Exhibit B that they need to have signed by their employer for your specific JSR in order for it to be approved. So if any of these things aren't in place, we'll cast an appropriate vote, and we will contact the nominee with what the issue is that's preventing them from being approved and how they can address it. So we'll send them a blank Exhibit B and say, this is what you need to do with your employer, or you need to be associated with an existing JCP member. If it's somebody that's just registered for the site and they're saying they are representing a JCP member, but that association hasn't been approved yet, this is the steps that you need to go through in order to have that approved. So we follow up with fairly explicit instructions. But the vote that we cast indicates which state they're in. So we can, if everything's fine, we vote yes. If they need to have the JSPA in place, then we vote this XJ vote. This granularity of vote is primarily for you as a spec lead to know why we haven't approved their nomination immediately. If they have the correct JSPA in place, but they don't have, they're an individual and they don't have the proper Exhibit B, then we have this XB vote. If they have submitted all the correct paperwork, but it's being processed, there's the P vote, that we're processing all the paperwork. If for some reason there is, and this hasn't come up in recent years, but if there is insufficient information provided in the nomination, we have this I vote for that it's incomplete. If there's some other reason that they can't participate on the expert group, we vote X. But it's almost always the XJ or XB these days. So as soon as we cast the vote, you as a spec lead can see the vote, and the nominee can see the vote when they look at MyJSR section of the website. And as soon as the condition changes, we update our vote. And moving on to slide 9, here's an example of what it looks like for the nominee. Now, normally there's personal information there, the name of the person, who they're representing. We've removed that to protect the innocent for this example slide. But you can see here that the nomination came in less than an hour ago. It also shows the age of the nomination. It shows the person's qualifications. It shows what he's written for the expertise of his organization and how much time he's said that he can commit to the working on the expert group. And then the vote from the PMO and the vote from the spec lead. Moving on to slide 10, this is talking about your votes as a specification lead. So it starts with you receiving the email notification, so that you know that there is a nomination for you to review. You can review it and discuss it among your with the existing expert group, if you already have an expert group. And then when you're ready to vote on the nomination, you go to your JSR's administration tab, and there's a URL for that. It's basically you go to your JSR page, and there is, if you've logged in, there's an administration tab across the top. You click that, and it will show you all the nominations that are open for your JSR. So, as I said earlier, you consider whether you want this person on your JSR and whether there's reason to have the person on the expert group, which is to say it's not duplicating the industry representation if your expert group is already particularly large. So you have three votes that you can cast. You can cast, yes, I want the person on the expert group. No, for whatever reason, don't want the person on the expert group. Or I need to think about it some more, so you're processing or pending a more final decision, and that's the P vote. So the P vote is there to indicate to both the nominee that you have seen the nomination and you are considering it, but also to forestall automated reminders that the system will start sending you if you don't indicate through voting that you have seen the nomination. As it says here at the bottom, you will start getting daily email reminders if a nomination sits for a week without any vote from you. That is, it remains in kind of the unvoted state. Then you'll start getting daily reminders from our system saying, you have this nomination, it needs a vote. You have this nomination, it needs a vote. So slide 11 is just a little clip of a JSR page showing what where the administration tab is. Slide 12 is talking about JCP 2.8. So with each iteration of the Java community process, we, particularly the last several, we've had a move toward greater transparency. And so there are additional transparency requirements around this expert group nomination process that JSRs that are operating under 2.8 have to fulfill. So one of the requirements of 2.8 is that the expert group has a public communications channel. This can be a wiki, it can be a blog, it can be an email alias, it could be a forum. The spec lead and expert group are free to determine the form of that. But the requirement is that the discussions of the expert group be made available to the public through some channel. In addition to the communications, a specific requirement for that channel is that all expert group nominations be made publicly visible through this communications channel. So that includes the name of the nominee, the JCP member that is being nominated if it's not one and the same. Any discussion that you've had within the expert group or consideration that you've had as a spec lead over the nomination and your decision on the nomination. If it's not obvious from what you've already provided, you also need to explicitly say why you've decided yes or no for the nominee. Now, this could be... These can be provided in bunches, for instance. You don't have to go into a lot of detail, but there needs to be some public visibility into the process for deciding who gets on and who doesn't. So it could be, we received the nominations from this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, and this guy, and we decided to not approve any of them because they had insufficient expertise or insufficient experience in this area, or we felt that we already had sufficient representation from that sector. So it doesn't have to go really into heavy detail, although you can if you want, but it needs to give an overview of the process for each nomination. So on slide 13, I want to... I'm sorry, yes.
This is Nigel Deakin. I was just wondering about the issues related to essentially commenting on somebody's abilities in a public, on the public internet. I might feel rather, as a spec lead, rather tempted to be economical with the truth in terms of saying this guy didn't sound as if he was very good at English, or this guy basically is just a student and doesn't know anything. And, you know, I don't want to be rude, I don't want to hurt feelings, and I don't want to do anything more important that's bad. Do you have any advice on you know, what we might need to bear in mind in terms of what we should say about the reason for refusal in a public place like this?
Well, diplomacy is certainly advisable, yes. It's a good point.
Yes. I think the other point, which I think is probably all right, is just making sure that the applicant, when they know, apply, is aware that their refusal or either, well, their refusal and the reasons for it will be published, you know, just in terms of data protection, you know, whether or not we're infringing their privacy. Is it clear when they sign up, you know, in the whatever it is they have to accept, that that's going to happen? Right.
Yes. It is. And it's also, you can give a very high level reason in the public forum. And if you wish, of course, you have the contact information for the nominee. And with many nominees, there may be a back and forth of the qualifications that they provided aren't clear. So you can follow up with them and say, you know, as a student, I don't think that you're really at the level that, for example, that I think you may be in over your head, you know, or you can follow up with them and through the conversation, you can make that clear there. That's not something that you have to blast out to the public. You can, as I say, you could lump them together with others that you haven't proved and have a more general reason that, you know, felt that the qualifications of this group of people weren't convincing me that we needed them. Or that expertise is already covered by others' expertise.
Along this line, it occurs to me, is there a mechanism for a person to withdraw his submission? Because that way, it might be possible to, like, have an offline discussion with the person and explain sort of the details in a manner that would be non or less painful than sort of public view kind of thing, and then that person could then withdraw, would have the opportunity of withdrawing his submission.
I think it's a great point, and it's something that I should put in the FAQs, and that's a great point. The way it would work right now, we don't have a system-based way for people to withdraw their nominations, but the way it would work now is that they could contact either the PMO or you, the spec lead, and say, you know, on further consideration through this discussion, I'm going to withdraw my nomination. And then you as a spec lead could say, they've withdrawn their nomination. And that's why we didn't, you know, there's no approval there because they've withdrawn their nomination.
Yeah, because it seems to me that would allow sort of an easier way out.
Yes. Right. A more graceful way. Good. That's a great suggestion. Thank you. Moving on to slide 13, I wanted to talk a little bit about updating an existing expert group. So over the course of a JSR, people who are on the expert group leave the companies that they represent, or people who maybe weren't available earlier on because of their workload find that they have time that has freed up, or you suspectly find somebody in your development of the specification that you feel would be really valuable, and so you contact them and invite them to be on the expert group. So I wanted to talk about those different cases. There's also, I mentioned earlier, one of the things that we as the PMO say that we will not approve a nomination when the expert group is closed. So to close an expert group, you as a spec lead say, I think we've had sufficient representation to work, and the quality of the nominations we've been getting lately, they're duplicating all the people who are on expert group already. We're just not getting, and I don't think that we will get anything anymore, and it's just causing me noise. So at this point, I'd like to close the expert group. So you contact us, and we remove the link from the JSR page. And any nominations we get after that, somebody's particularly persistent and they go to the page, and rather than going from the JSR page and clicking the link saying, I'd like to join the expert group, they go to the generic form and they fill out the information for your JSR because they so want to be on the expert group. Then we contact them and say, yeah, the expert group's closed. I'm sorry. Now, once you've closed the expert group, you can make an exception. Say, in that instance where you've been working on the specification for some time with your existing expert group, and you decide, there's this one person I want to have. So you tell them to fill out the form, and you say to us, I've invited this person on the expert group. I want them to be allowed onto the expert group. That is us, the PMO. You send us a message saying, you know, it's closed. I'm making an exception for this guy. So then we can process it normally as if it were open for that person. You can also remove an expert if it's not working out for whatever reason, or the expert is unable to participate for whatever reason. So again, you send a message to us and we remove them. So if an expert leaves and you want somebody to replace that expert, even if it is the same person who has left one JCP member as an employer and has become employed by another JCP member and they want to join, they have to go through the nomination process again, unfortunately. So if they're not already registered in their new incarnation, they register a new account, they submit a nomination, we process it normally. So if an expert works for a company and their contact information, say the way that the email is formatted for that company, or say the company's acquired, or they have a big mail system infrastructure change that changes how their email address is formatted, or they move to another country, they're still employed by the same country, but the country designation for their email address, whatever it is, they change their own contact information because they control it through their own account. That isn't intended to be and shouldn't be used as a mechanism for them to change employers, right? So they leave a company and they get employed by a new company, and instead of creating a new account, they go in and just change their email address. That's a problem because it will still show up as that they're representing their old company. So that's a big legal no-no. So their contact information changes, but their membership has not changed. They do it through their own profile. If their membership changes, or say a person leaves from an existing member and you have another representative of that same member, they have to go through the nomination process. One of the reasons is that the profile changes that they make as individuals to their own profile reflects across all JSRs. It's not just for your one JSR. We've had instances where individuals are serving on multiple expert groups. Their experts are serving on multiple expert groups, and they decide that they want to mirror the conversation of one expert group to a group within their organization. And so they create an alias within their organization, and they go into their profile and they edit their profile so that it's this alias instead of their own personal email address, not realizing, for whatever reason, that that's made the change to all JSRs and all the expert groups. So suddenly all that expert group traffic is being mirrored to this group that was really only interested in one JSR. So there is a way for you to do that, or for them to do that. They can create an alias and go to you, the spec lead, and say, I'd like this alias added as a read only for our expert group communications. And that can be done. But you and anybody else on the expert group can look in the expert group private listing that we talked about earlier and see the email addresses that the experts have. So you, as just as we can, and the PMO can see, well, that's strange. They've changed it to kind of an anonymous email address, or they've changed it to something that is a different domain than, if you notice it, then you can follow up with the expert. But there's no requirement for you to do so. Just wanted to make you aware that that could be going on, and it may mean that expert group conversations are getting mirrored to that you may be going to a group that's completely unrelated to your JSR. It may be something that the expert changed for some other JSR. So there's flexibility and a little bit of, I don't know, risk of confusion there. Moving on to slide 14. These are just some assorted notes. So when I mentioned it earlier, when both the PMO and you, the spec lead, have voted yes on a nomination, then the expert is automatically added immediately to the expert group, and they have access to the expert group private page and the expert group private alias. According to the process documents, the expert group officially disbands when the final release is posted. This means that although you as a spec lead can continue using the expert group, their legal coverage from the JSPA isn't there after final release for your collaboration on the maintenance process. It also means that the expert group will be closed and no new nominations will be accepted to the expert group. I talked about the JSR administration tab, and that's where you go to look at the nominations. Occasionally, you will want to look at older nominations. That's important because by default, that tab shows only the last 60 days of nominations, so that it doesn't get cluttered with really old nominations and you can see and find the new ones more easily. But if you want to refer back to an older nomination, say you didn't approve someone earlier because their expertise duplicated somebody else who was already on the expert group, And then later that person has to leave the expert group, and so you want to go back and maybe reconsider this person. In order to do that, there's this little thing that you can add on to the URL, the question mark days equals, and then a number of days, indicating how far back you want to show, and that's a way of getting around that 60-day default so that you can look at older nominations. And then, as I said previously, an expert's representing an employer, a JCP member who's an employer, and they leave that employer and start up with another one and want to continue on the expert group, naturally they do, they have to go through the nomination process again. That doesn't kind of magically happen. It's a repeat of the process. And that gives you, as a spec lead, also an ability to consider the expertise of the new organization, although that's not usually a consideration. It could be. So now we can have a time of questions, comments, before I stop the recording. Anything coming up for any of you? All right, thank you very much. The recording of this and the slides will be up probably by the end of the week on our website. And look forward for the next announcement of the next call in probably a month or so. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Harold.
Bye.